Chapter 13. Regeneration. Septimus sipped the drink, forcing himself to go through the suddenly difficult ritual of actually swallowing. He considered it a fair bet the beverage was distilled from engine oil. The bar, such as it was one of many on board Hell's Iris, no different from 100 others of its filthy kind. Wretched men and women mixed in the gloom, drinking foulness as they laughed and argued and shouted in a dozen different tongues.
"Oh, throne," Maruk whispered. Septimus scowled. "Don't say that here if you wish to leave alive."
The older man gestured to a lithe young woman across the room, moving from table to table. Her hair streamed down her naked back in a flawless fall of silken white, while an exaggerated femininity set her slender hips swinging with every step.
"Don't talk to it,"
Septimus shook his head. For a moment, Maruk thought he saw a smile on the other serf's face.
"It? Don't talk to it?"
But she'd seen Maruk's interest.
"Freksh, Sarkar,"
she purred as she approached, her dress of battered leather scraps whispering against her milky skin. Fingers the white of clean porcelain stroked his unshaven cheek. As if approving of something, she nodded to herself.
"Frekach, ku, snekra."
She had a child's voice, a girl on the edge of maidenhood.
I don't.
She shushed him with her fingertip, resting the pale digit on his dry lips.
"Frekach, ku, snekra, sichak." "Septimus,"
Maruk swallowed. Her eyes were wide, the rich green of forests had only seen in hololithics. Her fingertip tasted of some unknowable spicy musk. Septimus cleared his throat. The maiden turned with a ghost's grace, moistening her lips with a forked tongue.
"Trejak mu sek."
The slave drew back the edge of his jacket, revealing the holstered pistol at his hip. Slowly, pointedly, he shook his head and gestured to another table. The girl spat onto the floor by his boot, slinking away with her hips swinging.
"She's something else."
Maruk watched her moving away, leering at all the flesh on display.
"Skinwalker."
Septimus grimaced at the taste of his drink. He wasn't swallowing any more of the stuff, but it was grotesque enough even to pretend when it lapped against his lips.
"That leather she's wearing, do you see how it is sewn together?" "Yeah, it isn't leather."
Maruk watched the girl as she traced her fingernails gently across the back of a rough-looking man's neck.
"I don't think I can sit here much longer," he said. "That fat thing across the room has too many eyes. There's a beautiful girl with a snake's tongue walking around wearing human skin. Everyone in here is armed to the teeth, and the sorry bastard under the next table looks like he died 2 days ago."
"Be calm." Septimus was watching him closely now.
"Be at ease. We are safe, as long as we don't attract attention to ourselves. If you give in to panic, we'll be dead before the first yell has finished leaving your lips."
"I'll be fine."
Maruk calmed himself with a slug of his own drink. It spread a pleasant warmth through his gullet.
"This is good stuff."
Septimus let his expression speak for him.
"What?" Maruk asked.
"For all we know, this is distilled rodent piss. Try not to drink too much of it."
"Fine, sure."
He made another subtle scan around the room. One of the other patrons seemed to be too small for his own skeleton. Bones at every joint poked out from his flesh, even along the ridges of his spine and the stretched skin of his cheeks.
"Your lord was right, you know."
"In what way?"
"About escaping when we docked. Being stranded here would be worse than staying on the Covenant. Throne.
Septimus winced.
Stop seeing that?
Sorry. Look, have they even told you what the Legion agreed to?
Septimus returned a shrug.
First Claw pledged the Legion to a siege of some kind. They're calling it Villamus.
A world? An enemy fleet? A hive city?
I've not had the chance to ask.
Maruk's gaze drifted back to the beautiful girl.
Are there many of those people?
Septimus nodded.
The flaying of flesh is one of the more common traditions in many cults. Even the Legion does it, remember? Lord Uzes's ceremonial cloak was once the royal family of some insignificant backwater world the Covenant raided.
You mean the cloak once belonged to them?
No, was them. It is not leather either. But the Skinwalkers are a common enough cult. Mutants, mostly. Avoid them at all costs.
I thought she wanted to...
She did.
Septimus's human eye glanced to the doorway, and he adjusted a silver ring on his finger.
But she'd have skinned you afterwards. Come on.
Maruk followed as Septimus led him to the door. The younger slave reached back to loosen his short ponytail, letting his scruffy hair fall to his chin, half covering his subtle bionics.
Keep your weapon ready, he said. You never know when someone will take offense to us. You still haven't said why we're here, Maruk whispered. You're about to find out.
Octavia sighed, the kind of sigh where she felt she'd lost weight once it left her lips. As she breathed out, she exhaled months of tension, keeping her eyes closed as she tilted her head back. The warm water rained against her face, tickling her eyelids, running in pleasant trickles along her lips and chin. She had nothing in the way of soap, but even that didn't dent her enthusiasm. She scrubbed at her body with a rough sponge, almost feeling the grime of neglectful months sloughing from her skin. With the Covenant docked, taking on fresh water supplies, the refilled tanks took the strain off the depleted recycling processes. She risked a glance down at her figure, though it took surprising courage to do so. While she was far from the emaciated wraith she'd expected to see, her skin was a pale pallid, and the trails of blue veins showed faintly beneath her flesh. Still, she had to confess she felt unhealthier than she looked. Evidently, the nutrient-rich gruel that served as shipboard fare was more nourishing than its sandpaper taste suggested. With her nose wrinkled, she picked a little fluff, the same midnight blue of Legion slave clothing, from her navel. Delightful. With a quiet laugh, she flicked it away.
Mistress, did you call?
Octavia looked up with a start, covering herself with her hands. Octavia had at least a shadow of mundane human instinct within her, for she sought to ward her nakedness from a stranger's eyes. While one hand guarded her bare skin, the other flew to her forehead, palm covering everything beneath her hairline. But it was there, a flicker of sight, the shadow of something either human or close to it, glimpsed through the turbulent vision offered by her genetic gift. She saw its stained, multi-hued soul as an imprint in the seething torment of the warp all around. She had looked at someone, stared right at them, even if only for a heartbeat, with her truest eye. Her attendant, standing at the communal ablution chamber's edge, made a throaty, gagging sound. He reached up to his throat with trembling hands, choking on air he could no longer swallow. Darkness moved across the bandaged face, a wet, spreading darkness, broadcast from the attendant's black eyes and open mouth. The blood stained the dirty weave in moments, bathing the bandages in stinking red. He collapsed against the wall behind, racked by spasms, beating the back of his skull against the steel. Wrapped hands clawed at his head, pulling the bandages away to reveal a starkly human face, albeit one soured purple by asphyxiation. Bloody vomit emerged from the old man's lips in a reeking torrent, splashing across the chamber's wet floor. He lay there, grunting, twitching, bleeding, as the warm water still rained upon her. She swallowed, her human eyes still staring, as another of her attendants made his hunchbacked way inside. He spared her no glance, limping over to the dying elder, a beaten shotgun in his hands. He placed the sawn-off barrel in the older attendant's gaping, gushing mouth and pulled the trigger. The chamber resonated with the gunshot's echo for several seconds. What remained of the old man, which was very little above the neck, fell still.
"It wasn't my fault,"
Octavia breathed the words, caught between shock, anger, and shame.
"Aye, no," said Hound.
He turned to his mistress, his blinded eyes fixed upon her. She still felt a strange reluctance to lower her hands, either of them.
"I told you all to wait outside."
"I know this also."
Hound chambered another round with a sharp click-chuck. The spent shell tinkled across the dirty decking, rolling to a smoky rest against a wall.
"Telemach was in great pain. I entered only to end it. I will leave now, mistress."
"I think I'm finished now."
She turned away from the headless body and the ruination smearing the metal wall. But she didn't leave with Hound. She stayed in the room with the dead body, her hands against the shower wall, head lowered into the jetting water. Her hair, almost long enough to reach her elbows now, was a black velvet drape hanging down. She'd never killed with her eye before. The only time she'd ever tried had been a failure. At the moment of her capture so many months before, when Talos had dragged her into this new life with his hand around her throat. All the stories she'd heard over the years came flooding back to her in a bittersweet rush. Sailors' legends that Carton Sine's crew had whispered when they believed she couldn't hear them. The warning tales given to every scion of the Navis Nobilitae in the years of their extensive tuition. The things she'd never learned from her teachers, but found herself believing after reading them in old family logbooks.
"A navigator cannot kill without consequence," so the stories said. "Blood of my blood, do not let your soul be stained by such a deed,"
her father's words. And a notation in an ancestral Mervalian journal, more damning than all else. "Every murdering glance is a beacon to the Neverborn, a light in their darkness." She didn't look over at the body. She didn't need to. Its slumped repose was etched into her memory, scratched upon her senses with grotesque finality. A tickle in her throat was all the weary warning she needed. A few seconds later, Octavia was on her knees, puking the day's gruel into the rusty drainage grate. Her tears mixed with the falling water, lost in the downpour, a secret to everyone but herself. The Corsair's apothecarian saw a great deal of business. Many of the surgical tables held victims of the unending honor duels and violent disagreements aboard Hell's Iris. Most were human, though plenty of others occupied their own mutational places on the charts of known natural species. Deltrian moved through the chaos, his hooded features grinning at everything he saw. Talos walked behind him, as did Varial, the two warriors ostensibly acting as escorts. The tech adept paused briefly to point at another ceiling-mounted auto-surgery unit, its mechadendrites hanging with the unpleasant curl of a dead spider's legs.
"We require one of these for stereotactic procedures with the A, D, and F socketed limbs."
A dull-eyed servitor, wearing a robe similar to Deltrian's, trailed behind the other three. It drooled an acknowledgement, recording its master's wishes in an internal database. Deltrian paused again, picking up a silver instrument.
"Tyndala, 7 should suffice. A similar number of these occluders will be necessary. The servitor murmured another acknowledgement.
Varial tensed at the reaching hand of a corsair, grasping for his Medicaid vambrace. His thin features soured into a scowl.
Do not touch me. Your wounds will be tended soon.
Varial disengaged himself smoothly, resisting the urge to sever the warrior's fingers as punishment. He rejoined Talos a moment later.
Your facilities on the Covenant must be close to useless if you require so much from us.
You are not wrong. Battle and disuse have ruined almost all we have. In our last engagement, one of our squads was lost while flushing out a boarding party of Blood Angels from their refuge in the Apothecarian chambers. You cannot imagine the damage the fools in red inflicted, let alone the dead claw that failed to kill them.
A cryotome, Deltrine interrupted. Interesting.
Varial ignored him.
The Covenant is a ruin, Talos, held together by luck, and you are starting to appear the same.
Talos passed another table, stopping to slit the throat of the slave strapped there, killing him quicker than the death he was going to suffer by drowning in his own blood. The Night Lord licked the blood from his gladius, briefly lighting his senses with the flickering afterimages of another mind's memories. A chamber, messy, with the warmth of security, a trench raining mud and shrapnel, clutching a saber in his cold hands. The sickeningly mortal feelings of doubt, of fear, of weakness, as all strength bled from his limbs. How did these people live and function with such messy minds?
He supped a single taste, no more, and the insights were mist thin, gripping his senses lightly before fading fast.
My scars?
He asked Varial, after sheathing his gladius again and tracing a gloved fingertip along the faint scar tissue down the side of his face.
Not your scars. The skin has regenerated and bonded well from whatever damage it sustained, and those markings will grow ever fainter. I am referring to the tracks of pain along your features, less visible to untrained eyes.
Varial held his gauntlet close to Talos's face, too astute to risk touching the other warrior. The fingers crescented as if holding an orb over the Night Lord's temple.
Here, he said, pain blooms from here, crackling beneath your skin, in rhythm with your pulse, riding your veins like access tunnels to the rest of your skull.
Talos shook his head, but not in disagreement.
You are a better apothecary than I ever was.
In some ways, Varial withdrew his hand. Almost certainly. As I remember it, you have little in the way of patience.
Talos didn't argue the point. He watched Deltrian for a few moments as the tech priest peered down at a thrashing human, evidently intrigued by the analysis table upon which the wounded man lay.
The head pain is getting worse, is it not?
Varial asked Talos.
How could you possibly have guessed that?
Your left eye is irritated. The tear ducts are dilated by a measure of millimeters more than the other. The aqueous humor in the eye is also beginning to cloud with the suggestion of blood particles. As yet, these flaws remain hidden to mortal eyes, but the signs are there.
Servitors rebuilt my skull after a clash with Delcaris and Third Claw.
A bolter shell?
Talos nodded.
Crashed into my helm. Sheared away a chunk of my head.
He made a chopping motion along his temple.
For the first hour afterwards, I was able to get by with pain suppressors and adrenaline injectors. After that, I was oblivious for 3 nights, while the Medicae servitors worked their reconstruction.
Varial's sneer came as close to a smile as he could manage. They did imperfect work, brother. But I appreciate circumstances were hardly in your favor. The Night Lord felt the petulant urge to shrug.
I'm still alive, he said.
You are indeed, for now.
Talos glared at the apothecary.
Go on.
The pain you are feeling is pressure on your brain, brought about from degenerating blood vessels, some of which are swollen, while others are likely to be on the edge of rupture. The brain case's new shape is also a contributing factor, and if the pressure continues to increase, it is likely you will hemorrhage blood from your optic cavity, which will occur after your eyeball is pushed out from its socket by the mounting strain. You will also likely sustain a degree of necrosis among the degrading blood vessels in your brain, as well as in adjacent tissue, as you begin to suffer further cerebral vasospasms. However, I can rectify the servitor's flawed tinkering, if you desire.
Talos raised a black eyebrow, his face even paler than usual.
I wouldn't trust one of my own squad to help me into my armor, and they all wear the winged skull of Nostromo. Why would I trust the warrior with Huron's claw on his shoulder to pry through my brain?
Varial's amusement ended at his eyes.
Because of Frigga, Talos. Because I still owe you.
Thank you for the offer. I will consider it.
Varial keyed a command into his Narthesium gauntlet.
See that you do. If my estimate is correct, refusing means you'll be dead by the end of the solar year.
Talos's reply was broken off by Deltrian drifting back to them in a purr of smooth augmetics and a whisper of robes.
I have collated the required data, he declared in tinny pride.
Varial saluted, fist over his breastplate.
I will take the data to my master. Lord Garion is overseeing the resupply of your vessel.
Talos caught himself thumbing his temper. With an irritated growl, he replaced his helm, clicking it into place and bathing his senses in the warm thrum of his armor's auto-senses.
I will escort you back to the Covenant, Tech Adept. I must report to the Exalted myself.
Think on what I have said, brother, Varial said.
Talos nodded, but didn't answer. Maruk caught up with Septimus, finding it harder to move through the crowded thoroughfare. He also couldn't quite keep revulsion from showing on his face. Some of the creatures passing were brazen with their mutations. He almost collided with a spindly, black-skinned woman who cursed at him through a slack, rippling face like melting tallow. He muttered something loosely apologetic and hurried on. The spicy stink of sweat mixed with the copper of spilled blood, no matter where he turned his head. People and people were shouting, growling, shoving, and laughing in every direction. Septimus reached out a hand to grip another walker's shoulder. Halting the young woman in her stride, she turned, clutching an empty plastic bucket to her paunchy stomach.
Jigrash kol kuk,
the serf asked her. She shook her head.
Low Gothic?
Septimus tried. She shook her head again, her eyes wide at the expensive bionics just visible beneath the fall of his hair. She reached to touch them, to brush his hair aside, but he gently slapped her hand away.
Operor vos agnosco?
He asked. She narrowed her eyes and nodded, a quick bob of her head.
Wonderful,
Septimus thought. Some backwater variant of High Gothic, a language he barely knew anyway. Carefully, he led the woman, who looked to be wearing a plundered vestment of various discarded imperial uniforms, to the edge of the wide hallway. It took him several minutes to explain what he needed. At the end of his halting explanation, she nodded again.
"Me insista,"
she said, and gestured for him to follow. Finally, Septimus said under his breath. Maruk followed again. As he peered at the woman's bucket, he realized it wasn't quite empty. Three fruits, like little brown apples, bumped about in the bottom.
You wanted a fruit seller?
He asked Septimus, his expression showing what he was thinking, that the other serf was insane.
Among other things, yes.
He kept his voice low in the crowd.
Will you tell me why?
Septimus cast a disparaging glance over his shoulder.
Are you blind? She's pregnant.
Maruk's mouth widened.
No, you can't be serious.
How do you think the Legion makes new warriors? Hissed Septimus. Children, untainted children.
Please tell me you're not gonna...
I will leave you here, Maruk.
Septimus's tone froze.
I swear to you, if you make this any harder than it has to be, I will leave you here.
The three of them moved down an adjacent corridor, the woman leading them, still clutching her bucket. Less crowded here, but still too many witnesses, Septimus bided his time.
What did you tell her?
Maruk asked at last.
That I wished to purchase more fruit. She is taking us to another trader.
His voice thawed as he glanced at the older man again.
We are not the only ones doing this. Across the station, serfs loyal to the claws are playing the very same game. It is just something that must be done.
Have you done this before?
No. And they plan to do it right, so it doesn't have to happen again soon.
Maruk said nothing. They walked for another few minutes, before passing a smaller, darker side tunnel. Septimus's eyes, human and the augmetic alike, washed slowly over the corridor entrance. Unless he was grossly off course in this hideous labyrinth, this passage would lead back to the ship faster than returning down this particular thoroughfare.
Be ready,
he whispered to Maruk, and tapped the woman on the shoulder again, the silver ring on his knuckle brushing the side of her neck. She stopped and turned.
Quis?
She seemed confused. The crowd still sailed past, and she held her bucket protectively over her stomach. Septimus kept his silence, watching for the droop in her eyelids. As soon as her eyes began to roll back, he caught her in a smooth motion, keeping her standing. To all observers, those few who paid any heed at all while going about their own dealings, it seemed he suddenly embraced her.
Help me, he ordered Maruk. We need to get her back to the ship before she comes to her senses.
Maruk caught the bucket as it slipped from her slack fingers. They left it at the side of the corridor as they carried her between them, the woman's arms around their shoulders. Her boots moved mechanically, her eyes rolling drunk in their sockets, as she accompanied her kidnappers to a new life in the slave holds of the Covenant of Blood. Octavia clutched her jacket close as she left the communal ablution chamber. Several of the mortal crew waited in the corridor, kept out by her armed attendants, waiting their turn for the recharged cleansing racks. For obvious reasons, she had to bathe alone. Even though the crew knew the reasons, it seemed it only added to their dislike of her. Most averted their eyes when Octavia came into the corridor. Several made superstitious motions to ward off evil, which she found bizarre given where these people lived. Quietly, she asked two of her attendants to recover Telemark's body from the chamber and dispose of it however they wished. Nostraman mutterings followed her as she walked away. In a solitary life, she had never felt as lonely. At least on the Maiden of the Stars, the crew hadn't hated her. Feared her, certainly, for fear in a navigator's presence was a legacy of her bloodline as undeniable as the subspecies' third eye. But here, it was different. They loathed her. Even the ship despised her. Hound loped along at her heels. For a while they walked in silence. She didn't care where she was going.
"You smell very female now,"
Hound said unhelpfully. She didn't ask what it meant. It probably meant nothing at all, just another of his blindingly obvious perceptions.
"I don't think I want to live like this anymore," she said over his head, staring at the walls as she walked.
"No choice, mistress. No other way to live."
Thrown, her eye ached. Beneath the bandana, an abrasive itch was steadily growing angrier. It took supreme effort not to claw at the skin around the closed eye, soothing the rawness with her fingernails. Octavia walked on, taking lefts and rights at random. She was prepared to concede that she dwelled in self-pity, but she felt it was an indulgence she had earned lately. In the distance, she heard a faint shriek. It sounded female, though it cut off too quickly to be certain. Hammers, or something like them, crashed in dull industrial rhythm somewhere nearby, muted by the dense metal walls. Her eye gave another dizzying throb. The pain was making her nauseous now.
"Hound?" She stopped walking.
"Yes, mistress?"
"Close your eye. Never mind."
"Yes, mistress."
He paused in his hitched stride, looking around as Octavia removed her bandana. The skin of her forehead was sticky with sweat, the flesh almost burning to the touch. Blowing upwards did nothing but flutter a few wet locks of hair and make her feel foolish. It certainly didn't cool her down. Sweat dripped onto her nose. She wiped it, catching sight of a dark smear on her fingers.
"Throne of the God Emperor," she swore,
looking down at her hands. Hound shuddered at the curse.
"Mistress!"
"My eye," she said, wiping her hands on her jacket. "My eye is bleeding."
The hammering clanged louder as her words hovered in the air between them. Touching her forehead made her wince, but she daubed the bandana over the sore flesh. Her eye wasn't bleeding, exactly. It was crying. The blood drops were its tears.
"Where are we?"
she asked, her voice shaking as her breath misted before her face. Hound sniffed.
"The Apothecarian."
"Why is it so cold?"
The hunched slave pulled his weathered shotgun from beneath his rags.
"I do not know, mistress. I also am cold."
She retied the bandana while Hound aimed into the endless array of shadows. Ahead of them both, the massive bulkhead leading into the Apothecarian ground open on heavy gears. The hammering rang stronger, truer, coming from inside.
"Hound!"
Her voice was a whisper now.
"Yes, mistress?"
"Keep your voice down."
"Sorry, mistress,"
he whispered. His blunt-nosed shotgun tracked across the open door and the view beyond. Bare, silent surgical tables stood in the darkness.
"If you see the Voidborn in there, I want you to shoot her."
"The Voidborn is dead, mistress."
He looked over his shoulder, mutilated face bunched in concern. Octavia felt the blood running down her nose now, tickling her lips on its journey to drip from her chin. The bandana was no barrier, little more than a poor bandage. Soaked already, it did nothing to oppose the slow dripping. She drew her own pistol as she neared the open door.
"Mistress,"
she glanced at Hound.
"I will go in first,"
he stated. Without waiting for an answer, he moved inside, his hunch keeping him low, shotgun raised level with his unseeing eyes. She followed him in, sighting down her pistol. The room was empty. Every surgery table was bare. The abandoned machinery made neither noise nor motion. Octavia blinked her human eyes to ward off the blood-stinging touch. It didn't help much. Metal crashed against metal, almost deafeningly loud in the freezing chamber. She spun to face the far wall, aiming at 10 sealed vault doors, each one the height and width of a human. One of them juddered in time to the hammering from behind. Whatever was within wanted to come out.
"Let's get the hell out of here," she stammered.
Hound was less inclined to flee.
"Can it harm us, mistress?"
"It's just an echo,"
she checked her pistol's ammunition counter.
"Just an echo, like the girl. Just an echo. Echoes can't hurt anyone."
Hound didn't have the chance to agree. The vault door burst outwards on squealing hinges. Something pale moved in the darkness inside.
"Not with Malkarion's Baltar."
Its sepulchral voice, toneless, yet sharp, cut the cold air.
"Wish to join First Claw."
Octavia backed away, eyes wide, murmuring for Hound to follow. Another figure blocked the doorway. It stood tall, silhouetted against the gloom, red eye lenses tracking her movements with silent regard.
"Talos!"
She breathed the name, relief flooding through her.
"No, Navigator."
The Night Lord stepped into the chamber, drawing his weapons.
"Not Talos."
He returned, just as Varial had known he would. The Flayer acknowledged him with a nod, and deactivated the hololithic text he'd been studying. Talos had not come alone. Sirion, Zahn, and Mercutian stood behind him, armored, helmed, and silent, but for the chorus of growling armor.
"When I sleep," the prophet seemed almost ashamed, "I dream. My muscles react, but I do not wake. If I break the straps binding me to the table, my brothers will hold me down while you perform the surgery."
"One is missing," Varial noted.
"Uzas often chooses not to heed our summons," Sirion replied, "unless war threatens."
"Very well."
The Corsair apothecary moved over to the lone table in his private chamber.
"Let us begin.